What's up, y'all? It's 10-3 time in Tennessee. How are you? Hope you're doing well. Hope everything's going well, going right in your world here on this Friday afternoon, January the 9th, 2026, coming to you from WBIR World HQ here, as we've decided we are the only WBIR.
Once again, we're the only WBIR in the world, so I guess.
I don't know. It's just you grow up seeing like somebody being like, we're from BBC World Headquarters or CNN World Headquarters. I'm like, this is WBIR World Headquarters here, just a couple miles away from downtown Knoxville, where it is raining. Cats and dogs today, pandemonium.
Yeah, it's a little not so great outside.
No, it's I am not as I'm sitting here with Lord of the Streams, Tom Barclay. There are many things I'm not. One of which is a meteorologist. But I just think every time that it feels like it's way too warm for a certain time of year. Anytime you're like, you know, it really shouldn't be like 67 degrees in January, I'm thinking something's going to come through and change that. We're going to get a storm. I'm just guessing. You know, it just feels like when there's too much sort of heat for a certain time of year, you're like, something's going to come and change this. There's something coming behind
this.
We
get a few wacky days in like January and February often where it's either, as you said, raining cats or dogs out there, which is going to be the case for this one, I think, or just incredibly stormy, windy, kind of, you know. Remember in Nashville, they had those tornadoes back in, like, December.
Yes.
I think more than a year ago at this point.
The snow-nados or whatever,
yes.
Almost?
Well, it was just regular. It was one of these days where it just got randomly warm. When they happened in January or February.
I call them snow-nados, yeah. Just because I like that term. But it's just kind of fun to say. But it's probably not fun to, you know, be through. And I've been through a tornado. Not so fun. Not so fun.
We get our fair share.
They're not fun. Was definitely one, maybe in two. It depends on kind of how you're. One was like, I think it was. But it was like, meh, F1. The other one down there in Atlanta, that was a humdinger. That was a real one. We got a lot. We had a lot going on that night down there in Atlanta. But there is, it just feels like, and I bet if we showed outside, what's it look like right now? Can you tell from the weather camera if it's out there still like?
I mean, it's just not going to look so great out there. You can't see a thing out there right
now. Look at that.
It's just fogged over.
Look at that. It's gray.
Yeah, well, let's take a look here. Where were we heading to? We got Market Square where you can see something going on at least.
We're tarped over.
Where the old ice skate rink was.
You want to know a true story about this?
Ripped it apart.
You want to know a true story about this? This is a true story, Tom. This right here, what you're seeing on the screen right now.
Yeah.
Imagine that is it's the ice skating rink's been set up. Nobody's skating on it yet.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just sitting there like a blank sheet, like a white sheet. For like a week and a half, I walked through our newsroom, and there is, you know, we have like all newsrooms of this size, there's a wall of just cameras that are like, here's every camera we have, what they're showing at all times, yada, yep. Yada. And for a week and a half, I walked by and thought that was just a badly positioned camera that was on a rooftop. I walked in one day, and I think it was old Andrew McClung, old Andy McClung, that I walked by and I said, are they ever going to adjust that camera? And he goes, what are you talking about? And I went, that one. What? He goes, why would they adjust it on the ice skating rink? It's like, oh.
Right.
I thought that was somehow a camera had just been moved on the top of a roof and it was just sitting there. And I honestly thought that for more than a week. That's pretty embarrassing. But that's what I thought. But yeah, it's a nasty day out there. It's not what you would call maybe the most conducive weather to hosting a bunch of people from the transfer portal.
No.
But then again, if you are deciding your transfer portal fate on what's the weather like where I'm going that day, you know, that's probably shouldn't be the highest on your priorities, even though I remember.
Well, think of it this way, though. If you're looking at, like, blizzards and snow, yes, then maybe that's
the one exception.
You, right?
That's what I was getting ready to tell the story of Luke Altmaier, who's from Starkville, Mississippi, starts his career at Ole Miss, then transfers to Illinois. You know, he just ended his career by beating Tennessee in the Music City Bowl. But when he transferred out of Ole Miss and got dropped off at Illinois, his parents dropped him off in like an absolute blizzard.
Yep.
And he was like, and his mom just said, you know, that boy must love football. Like, I don't want to deal with it. So that part I understand. But if it's like, oh, it was raining a lot and it was, you know, there's a lot going on. Speaking of visitors, though, we'll mention this a little bit later, obviously. But Sam Levitt, the number one overall prospect in the portal, who is the quarterback from Arizona State. And he visited Tennessee for a couple days, which is good. Left Tennessee without committing, not so good. Now on his way to visit Miami, which if you watched the game last night, he'll be down there visiting Miami while they're preparing to play for the national championship. So that's on the surface, not ideal. You know, not that these should be emotional decisions. They're kind of business decisions, but I can just, you know, you don't have to kind of squint too hard to see a guy like Levitt going down there, visiting these guys as they're getting ready to prepare for a national championship game while they're being quarterbacked by someone who just transferred in last year and will be in the NFL next year. You see where this is going. It's daunting. Now, that does not mean that, and these kids are not always swayed by like the last thing they saw, right? Don't get me wrong. You want either somebody's very first visit or somebody's very last visit. Because in the old days, you used to jostle like crazy to get the best prospects you could get in town for the last weekend before signing day. Because you'd be the last in-person on-campus pitch that a player would get. And this matters. And you know, so there are a couple ways to go about it. You could try to go on the front end really hard, get the first visit, and really wow somebody, knock their socks off, get a commitment. Or you would want to get the very last one. Now, it's not about that as much. Now, that matters, and if you can get the last visit, you want to get the last visit. Where things get interesting now is, and we've heard situations like this come up quite a bit, at least I have the past couple of years, where you get a situation where at the end of the day, it's just coming down to money. So whether you are somebody's first visit, second, third, fourth, fifth, if they're smart, they're going to take all their visits. Because if you're smart, I say this all the time, the NCAA gives me five, you know how many I want? Five. If they give me four, you know how many I want? Four. If they give me 10, I want 10. I want to take every official visit I can. And I would suggest that, you know, my kid do the same, because I think you should go out there and see. You should go out there and how many times are you going to get basically paid vacations to go to these places, right? And on top of that, you know, you're going to get wined and dined. You're going to get, you know, all the perks that come with that, all the gear, everything else that comes with it, stuff we're probably going to talk about. And then you just get, you'll never know if you don't try. You'll never know if you don't look. And so these guys go make all these decisions, but at the end of the day, they're going to look at all these places and then wait, who is offering the most money? Yeah, I'll go there. So that does happen. Now, it shouldn't be the only thing. And with some guys, with a fair amount of guys, it's not the absolute only thing. You know, like if one place offers you just a, you know, just a little bit, like 1% less or 2% less than the other place, but you like that place a lot better and you think you can win more there, or you'd like that coach more. With a lot of these guys, they are reasonable. They're not just saying, they're not so naive that it's just like, this was the most offer by 5,000 or 10,000, I'm going there. And again, it's all relative. If you're making a million, what's a couple thousand? If you're making 100,000 or 50,000, well, a couple thousand means a lot more. So in some, everybody's different. But a lot of these guys will kind of say, well, the money isn't quite the same here. Let's see if I can get them to match. But me and my advisor know if we can't quite get them to match, we're still going to go there because this is where I want to be. So that does still happen. So just because somebody leaves Tennessee without committing does not mean that they're not going to go there. It's obviously very, very fluid. All of this stuff these days is, you get tired of saying that because I'll be honest, it can be a crutch for people in our profession to say a situation is fluid, like that sort of absolves you from the responsibility of trying to find out what it is. You know, there's a couple of one old saying, one new saying in journalism that I kind of they kind of get in my craw a little bit, or there's variations of them, and like saying something is fluid is, well, yeah, but here's what you're hearing right now. And again, that could change in 5 or 10 minutes, but again, that does not mean that you don't say anything and then after the fact go, oh yeah, I knew this the whole time. That drives me nuts. That stuff drives me nuts. It's just like also, whether it's sports, whether it's news, whether it's anything, whether somebody goes about every single story saying, all I'm going to tell you is here's what one person said, here's what the other person said. Well, like, there's also a saying I sort of believe in, and again, it's easy to say this as someone who gets to opine for a living and not just do straight news anymore, but it's like, if one person's telling you that it's raining and the other person tells you it's not raining, you don't just write that one person says it's raining, the other says it's not raining. Get off the couch, go outside, see if it's raining or not. That's, you know, that's what we're supposed to do, right? This person said it's raining. This person said it's not. Well, I guess we'll never know. Sure we can. Go outside. Is it raining? Or is it not? Now we know. That's, like, sometimes these narratives just drive me nuts. And we're going to talk a lot more about the portal, but if you were watching that game last night, you heard just this narrative that Carson Beck has overcome adversity. And if you were up last night watching the game and following the socials, you'll see that I opined on this last night. But there was a narrative, I don't know what you want to call it, but they were sitting there trying to tell me, that Carson Beck has overcome all this adversity. And then I thought, did he? Because what I saw was someone who, 2 years at Georgia as a starting quarterback, had a 24-3 record. Someone that then took a very, very lucrative offer to transfer to Miami and is now about to play on a team that's in the national championship game for the third time in his college career. So, again, I say to you, where is all this adversity here? I mean, do we have different definitions of the word? Are we just trying to say? I mean, if you're creating a false narrative just because you think it makes compelling television, you know what you're still doing? You're propagating a false narrative. That's what you're doing. It's nonsense. And the other one was two things that I think can both be true at the same time. And there are a lot of people who can't wrap their brains around both of these things being true at the same time. They think of this as kind of an either or. And to me, it's nonsense. They can absolutely both be true. The fact is, for the third consecutive year, the SEC is not going to win the national championship. And beyond that, the SEC is not even going to play in the championship game. And there are people saying, well, why'd they get all these teams in the playoff then? And to which my thought was, forgive me for saying this, how dumb are you? I don't like to say it. I don't like to think it. Try to grow up. Try to, you know, mature as a person. Try to be more understanding, more patient with people. But I still can't sometimes. And to sit there and say that just because you don't have the best team in the country in your conference doesn't mean that you can't have like five of the top 10 or six of the top 15 or seven of the top 20 or eight of the top 25. How do you not like, how do you not understand how these things work? Like you could have a, take a group of people, right? And rank them in order of the money they make geographically. Right. And you could have two of them, you know, that aren't from the South, but eight of the top 15 are. That's not weird. It's not like they just congregate together in this one little area. So if they got the best team in the country in their league, boy, let me tell you, they must have 10 of the top 20, 10 of the top 15. No. I would say who got in that playoff from a power conference that didn't deserve it? Maybe Alabama, maybe. Maybe, but they played for the SEC championship. I got no problem with that. Miami, during the season, what happened when they played an SEC team? I mean, it's this whole narrative of you should win the national championship because you got five or six teams in the thing. Like, that's not how this works. You know that GIF? That's not how this works. That's not how any of this works. It's just, sometimes we just say things to say them. And I really wish that as media, especially I'll say this, sports media, because I live in that world. I think we got to be better than this, man. Like, we got to stop thinking that the people that are, you know, watching us and listening to us and reading us are completely stupid. You just can't. It's not like anyone, well, some people are that dumb, but not many, not really. And you just sit there and you just feel like you're getting a fire hose of nonsense coming at you all the time. Can we just tell the truth about things? Carson Beck made good money at Georgia, won a lot of games at Georgia, then went to Miami for more money, and now he's still winning football games. Hey, nothing wrong with that story. He's allowed to go do all of those things. He's allowed to go do that. But to sit here and say that he's overcome all this adversity and little old Miami, you know, this little old private school getting to a national title. Look how much they've paid for the roster. Just tell the story. Just tell the truth. Sometimes the truth, you know what, still a pretty good story. I mean, last night Beck was all over the place, man. Some throws that were awesome. Some throws that were just gross. But you know what? The biggest thing I learned from that game last night is not something new. Miami made at least a half dozen plays that when you put them together should never let you lose or should never allow you to win a football game at that level. You should not be able to win, in theory, you should not be able to win a college football playoff semifinal while making as many just can't have them mistakes as Miami made. The penalties, awful. Dropped interceptions, awful. Some of the play calls, awful. And these are things that when you put them together, you're like, you can't win a game like this. And they did. And you know why? Because they bought that roster, and that roster's really good. And talent can make you right when you're wrong. And again, I said the same thing about Texas Tech going into the playoff. You know how much shame there is in any of that? None. These are the rules. Play by them. And to people who sit there and say, well, I don't like what college sports is becoming. Okay, that's fine. Do you want to win? Do you want to win? And if the answer to that is yes, then until they change these rules, you're going to have to keep paying or you're not going to be at that table. You're just not. I mean, spending that money doesn't guarantee you anything other than a chance. But I'll tell you what, not spending you guarantees, you're not going to be in the playoff. You're just not going to get there. Unless you get really lucky, it ain't going to happen. We got a lot more to talk about on the show. I just couldn't get through the first segment without talking about this stuff going on, that stuff with Beck and the narrative and all that. We got a lot more to discuss, though. We got a lot more portal stuff. We got some basketball stuff. Tennessee with a big, big game tomorrow afternoon down in Gainesville. We're going to talk about that and much more and come right back here on 10 and 3.
Secret time.
It is secret time, y'all.
Like, I try to give people the benefit of the doubt on this stuff, but I'm watching that game last night, and I'm going, you're really going to say this? Like, what's adversity? Come on, man.
Well,
you know what real adversity is? Come on, man. Like, not like I even really know. Like some of us really have any idea. Like, these words mean something.
True. But, you know, that's a word that gets commonly thrown around, especially in postseason.
I know, but it's just like to build a narrative. Like,
this is
the miracle on ice. Dude, you've been to Miami. He's getting paid nice money to be in a nice place to be. Like, it's all
right. He's all right. Yes.
He's all right. You know? Yeah. Like, he ain't hurting.
For sure.
And he made a business decision, and it worked out. It obviously worked out because, you know what? Miami's playing for the title. Georgia ain't. So it worked out. You can't say he did anything wrong there, but to act like, I don't know. And that pass interference call in the last play of the game. That was, I probably should have mentioned that during the regular segment. Still might at some point. But the whole, there's like one play where officials, no matter what, will almost never make the call. That was comical pass interference on the final play of the game. But on a Hail Mary, nobody ever wants to call it. Officials will sit there. You could rip off somebody's helmet, gouge their eyes, take out a shiv, get them right in the belly with it. They ain't calling DPI on you. Officials just don't want to call pass interference on a Hail Mary.
Yeah.
But it was like if you go back and watch it, it was wild.
For sure.
Push it as far as you can, really.
All right. We're back to come back here. So secret time is over.
Welcome on back to 10 at 3. We got a lot to discuss. If you missed secret time a minute ago, I shouldn't let you in on it, but I will. We were talking about the Hail Mary on the last play of that game last night over there in Arizona. It's really, really funny how far that stadium is away. If you've ever been there, how far away it is from, like, anything else over there in that area. It's just like, you're like, oh, my God, am I still not at the stadium? It's way out there, and there's not a real easy way to get there either. But on that final play of the game, that was hilarious. Defensive pass interference that wasn't called. And again, am I bothered that it wasn't called? Not that much, because there's one time where officials just don't want to call anything, and it's a Hail Mary. And now this was a little different because it wasn't a Hail Mary from the 50 or from the, you know, from 60, 70 yards away. It was from the 35. So it's a little different. Pass was absolutely catchable. And there was a little bit of hand fighting between both of them going on until the very end when the ball's getting there. That is about the most blatant defensive pass interference that you're going to see. But they don't want to call that in that situation. They just don't, and they didn't. But I laughed hysterically when they were asking. They were sitting there, the rules analyst on TV was saying, oh, it's a little bit of a mutual kind of hand combat there. I'm like, really? Really? That's what it was? Huh? You want to watch that again? Really? I don't know. That and targeting, nobody really seems to know. But that wasn't like a questionable, was it, wasn't it? It absolutely was pass interference. But it was one of those, do you have to call it? Do you want to call it in that situation? That's where it's actually, that would be the honest discussion. That would be the honest way to have that discussion. To sit there and say, oh, well, was it even a penalty? That's not. That's intellectually dishonest. The actual narrative or the actual question that's interesting is it worth calling an obvious penalty there? And that's where I wouldn't have minded if they called it. Because normally in a pass interference, I'm like, pass interference on a Hail Mary, I'm like, come on, it is what it is. But I think the threshold's got to get a little bit lower the closer you get to the end zone in a situation like that. And no one could have had any serious complaints if that had been called. It was, you know, meh. It absolutely was pass interference. But I tell you, if this game that we get tonight is even remotely as entertaining as that game last night was, we are going to get a proper start to the weekend. Some of these playoff games have been absolute bangers. Some of them at the beginning, not so good. But these semifinals over the years have been, they've been fun, man. They've been really fun. And I do think it's funny that there's all this silly narrative. Silly media narratives have sort of been the topic du jour today. But it's a soup of the day. It sounds good. I'll have that. Are too many teams in the playoff? What are some of these teams doing in the playoff? There's only a couple teams that could actually win this thing. Well, Miami went into this thing not knowing if it was going to get in. And now Miami's a week away from playing either Indiana or Oregon for the national championship. I think Miami would lose to either one of those teams. But, I mean, I don't know that. I don't know that. They'd be an underdog in either of those games. But I saw last night a Miami team that almost tried at times to lose the game and still won it. And so there's all this talk about what's going on here, how many teams are in here, yada, yada. You want to know how many double-digit NCAA men's basketball tournament teams have played for a national championship? Zero. Miami's about to do that. So maybe we need to revisit that whole narrative. Normally, because what was the talk that first weekend? It was, what are some of these teams doing in the playoff? Man, these guys are getting embarrassed. They got no shot. There's only a few teams that could win this thing. You sure? Now you're watching Miami. Now you're like, what if Notre Dame had gotten in? You know, what if Vandy had gotten in? You see what Miami's doing, and you're like, I don't know, maybe. So maybe we need to be careful. Maybe it's just Alabama's quarterback was dinged up, weren't playing their best ball to the end of the season, but they made it to the SEC championship game. You couldn't really not have him in. But like James Madison, these others, like, did that have Tulane? Did they really have to kind of be in there? I'd be fine with one of them get in. Both of them, I was like, what are we doing here? Because we're seeing with Miami here, you could be the last power conference team getting in there. And in some years, apparently this is one of them, you still got a shot. And I'm talking about Miami a lot because that's where the game was between Miami and Ole Miss last night. Now Miami will be the first team, I believe, ever to play for a national championship in its own stadium. That's interesting how that worked out this year. Stars kind of aligning there. And now Sam Leavitt looks like he'll be down there visiting after he left Tennessee without committing. And, of course, that does not mean that, you know, I mean, Leavitt could still be in play now at LSU again because, you know, Damon Williams and all that, he's going to end up staying at Washington. So this whole thing is... this is interesting. We do know who is going to be at LSU next season, though, and that's Jordan Ross. Tennessee's edge rusher did announce his decision today. He has signed with LSU, visited Alabama, considered some others. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that's not a significant loss for Tennessee. It is. Now, is it an irreplaceable loss? No, but it's a big loss. Tennessee's been really good at edge the past couple of years. He was kind of the next guy on that list. You know, kind of that whole, you know, you had Byron Young, then you had James Pierce Jr., then Josh Josephs. Jordan Ross was like the next big thing, and now he's going to be at LSU. So is that a good thing for Tennessee? No. But there's still some guys out there. There's still some guys out there, including one that's got a tie to one of the guys who did actually sign with Tennessee in the past 23 hours. We told you yesterday, when we see in 23 hours, probably going to have some more Tennessee commits or signees in the portal to talk about. And we do have one, two, three, got three of them. Tennessee picked up Penn State defensive lineman Xavier Gillen, Louisville kicker Cooper Ranvier, and here's an interesting one. I have not seen this in a hot minute, Tom Barclay. I have not seen this in a hot minute. Eastern Kentucky's Blake Howard is going to go to Tennessee, and he is a long snapper and a linebacker. That is not a combination you see very often. Now, I don't think he'll be starting at Tennessee as a long snapper next season, and I don't think he'll ever start at Tennessee as a linebacker. But in 2 years, he could be the long snapper, or somebody, you know, guy gets hurt next season, he could be the long snapper. And I could see him maybe at least getting a few reps here and there at linebacker on special teams. You talk about a really interesting combination of things, because it opens up so many other thoughts. Like the first one off the top of my head, if you're a long snapper who also plays a position out there on the field, how much you got to protect your hands? Because your hands are kind of your livelihood there on those long snaps. And if you go in there for a tackle and you mash your hand on somebody's helmet or somebody steps on your finger in the pile, or, you know, you could be down a long snapper. And these are things that you don't think about really, because a long snapper, usually, you know what he does? He long snaps. That's what he does. And sometimes on punts, he'll go down there and make a tackle. Sometimes they're athletic enough to go do that. But having a guy who could potentially, in theory, also play a position, that's really interesting to me. I like the additions, by the way, the other one. Xavier Gillen is a good player, I think. He's got a nice future. He's already a good defensive lineman. Obviously, he knows Jim Knowles, playing for him at Penn State. And he's already on the socials trying to get some of those Penn State guys to come with him. And, of course, everybody knows Chas Coleman. Everybody knows Dwan Lane. Everybody knows Amari Campbell. But those are guys, Penn State guys, that a lot of people, including Tennessee, are trying to get. And as soon as he commits, young Mr. Gilliam is out there on the socials saying, I got to have my dogs with me. Let's go. Which reminded me of a story. Tom, reminded me of a story. When I was, I won't say whose name it was. It's not that it's anything wrong. I'm never going to share, I'm never going to share someone's name unless they know I'm doing it. There's a former player, a lot of y'all know him, defensive lineman. And when he signed at a school, I was doing some stuff about, like, you know, how'd you end up here? Why'd you make the decision to come here? Yada, yada, yada. And he was like, well, you know, I kind of knew this is where I wanted to be, but I wanted to make sure coaches let me bring my dogs with me. And the way that I'm wired, and I think the way most people would be wired these days, you go, oh, you mean like a teammate or something? You don't have any teammates on this roster. Is it somebody from your hometown, you know, or is it like a strength coach or somebody that you really wanted to come with you, yada, yada? And he looks at me and he goes, nah, fool, canines. Like he wanted to bring his actual dogs. his actual pets, his dogs that he loved so much. And he was like, my mama can't take care of them. I got to take care of them. They're my dogs. And it's just that stuck with me my whole life. There's times where I'll be driving down the road and I'll just see somebody walking their dog and I'll go, nah, fool, canines. It's one of the things that just sticks with you. It's, I don't know. To me, anyways, that was fun. To me, anyways, that was a fun story. And I should send him a text and see if he minds mentioning his name on the air, see if he will be okay with that. But that's, because nowadays you're thinking, well, yeah. Like, you got a teammate, you got a brother who wants to be a walk-on, you got a, you know, is it like, you know, hey, maybe your girlfriend finds a way onto the cheerleading team, or maybe your girlfriend finds a way to be a track and field walk-on, or, you know, we all know how the game is played. We all know how this goes. We all know it. You know, maybe your sister or brother gets hired in the operations department, or, you know what I mean? Like, it could be anything. And that's where my head was going, but nah, fool, canines. Tennessee did lose out on a couple other guys, though. One of the most notable ones that I noticed was Dylan Sikorsky, the offensive lineman from Oregon State. who Tennessee, inside offensive lineman, center guard type. Tennessee really wanted him. But so did a lot of other people, and he is signed with the Tejas Longhorns. He will be a Texas football player next season. Tennessee was always in a tough battle there. Thought they had a chance. They did, but, you know, didn't get him. There's other guys they're looking at. We'll see. There are some cornerbacks, though, who are still out there on the market that have visited or will visit Tennessee, and are guys Tennessee and others would very much love to have. That'd be arrogant. That'd be Aaron Scott from Ohio State, and that'd be Gentry Williams from Oklahoma. And they're both interesting for a couple of different reasons. Scott played a little bit at Ohio State, didn't start a lot, but he's still got some time left on his career. And it's not like not starting all the time at Ohio State means you're not a good football player. That was the best roster in the country last season. I think arguably the most talented roster in the country again this season. That's not the end of the world, not being a regular guy on that team, to the point where the schools he's considering the most to transfer to are Tennessee, LSU, and Oregon. So if those are your three, you're like, okay, yeah, he's good. He's good, or could be good. And Gentry Williams is interesting because he started off and on at Oklahoma, started, I think, 5-6 games this year maybe, and we all saw that Oklahoma defense. I mean, those guys were – dude, they played hard, man. Oklahoma played hard. That team that night in Knoxville played with about as much effort and drive and determination and will as I've seen a team play with in a hot minute. That team, it stood out to me, and I've mentioned it several times. But it would get them some penalties. It would occasionally get them over-aggressive and somebody would make a big play. But just the relentless way they played, very Brent Venables. I was very impressed with it. I thought, you know, I like what I'm seeing from this bunch. They are getting after it. And if he had not had shoulder surgery, he'd have probably started just about the entire year. But he's a guy who is looking at Tennessee and some other big places. That's a guy who Tennessee really, really could use. Another one Tennessee really could use is a running back from the University of California, the Cal Bears, Kendrick Raphael. He is a good running back, had, I think, nearly 1,000 yards this year, around double-digit touchdowns. Good player. He's someone who Tennessee could use because we talked about this yesterday. All the positions Tennessee needs in the portal, or kind of needs, there's like absolute gotta have, and then there's you'd like to have, and you kind of need, but if you don't get them, it's not the end of the world, but you really, really, really kind of do need them. You put those two categories together for Tennessee, and you've got basically an entire football team. So that's what the needs are, but this isn't abnormal. Look at the number of people. What's it, 21, 22 who have left Texas? You know, Bama's had a bunch leave. Georgia's already had double digits in the portal. That's just the world we're in now. And we can sit here all day and say college football is broken and not necessarily be wrong. But I think a lot of this is just more open and honest about the way things have always been. And now it's just kind of out there. The difference being now you can transfer every single year if you want to. Yes, I would like at least part of this genie put back in the bottle. Let's at least keep the genie tethered to the bottle. Let's at least keep the genie's tail tethered, tied into that bottle. It ain't going back in, tell you that much. You ain't going back in. But, you know, I think you could at least maybe rein it in just a little bit. I think there are some things you could look at there. And I hope the discussion doesn't just become college football's broken. I would like it to be, well, college football has some issues, and how can we fix them? To just sit there and say it's broken, wash your hands of it, I don't find that to be productive. That's not a productive conversation. You're just complaining at that point. Try to offer a solution. That's what we're about here at 10 at 3. We got a lot more to discuss on this show, though, before we get out of here for the weekend. We have not mentioned enough Tennessee basketball today. We are going to address that as soon as we get back because that's a big, big game for the Vols tomorrow in Gainesville tomorrow afternoon, and we're going to discuss it right here when we come back here in just a minute on 10 at 3.
All right.
Secret time.
Secret time again.
Yeah, the I don't want to say apologize, but I didn't really want Hoops to get kicked to the very final segment today. Mm-hmm. But with all the stuff going on in the portal and the stuff that was going on that was said last night during that Georgia Ole Miss game, where I was sitting there like, are you kidding me? Sitting there watching it. And I'm in the house, like in our bedroom. My wife's like, what are you? I'm trying to sleep. I'm like, there's some ridiculous things being said right
people
now.
People are posting things on social media, yeah. And let me tell you, people, not a fan.
People are saying things on this broadcast that I do that not too. Agree with.
Yeah, and I've had a few, you know, you watch a few of those games where you're just like in complete defiance with the commentating on it, right?
Yeah,
like,
and I think
I've had a few of those.
And I think the vibe that I was picking up from her was basically, would you mind having that inner dialogue out loud, either in your office or in the living room. Okay, fair enough. Got me there. All right. You know, you are what? I guess, you know, what, 5 months pregnant, 4 months pregnant? Okay, you win this battle. You win this battle. That's fine. But yeah, that was it. Just it was driving me nuts, man. It's driving me nuts.
Sometimes it gets under your skin.
It just, I'm like, is this,
about 30 seconds
is
away,
this really adversity? Come on. Come on, man. Come on.
Once again, I mean, they're going to prioritize the narrative on that one. You know?
And to sit there and say
you got to have a story.
And to talk about how maybe the SEC got too many in because there's nobody in the title again. I'm like, no, they're two different things. These two things are not connected. They are not the same thing. They are separate things. Both interesting things, but not connected.
And we're back.
Welcome back to 10 at 3 here with Wes Rucker and Lord of the Streams, Tom Barclay, coming to you from WBIR World HQ right here in rainy Knoxville, Tennessee today.
Looking like the West Coast out there right now.
Yeah, it's and on, you know, Friday's of the days during the week where that's where I'm going to be driving in just a minute. I got to go do daycare pickup and I got to hustle across town to make it on time like I usually do on Thursdays and Fridays. Mm-hmm. And I'm not looking forward to driving through I-40/75 in that. 40/75 is not fit for purpose even in the best of times, sir.
Yeah, a rainy day on I-40.
At rush hour, I
dread it.
I'm gonna need to pack a meal and maybe a sleeping bag for that trip across town to go pick up the tot today. But that's okay because you know you have a child, you have responsibility. Sometimes you gotta suck it up, do it. You know. Yeah, they can't. What? Well, he's 4 years old now, so he's at least 2 years away from being able to take care of himself in every way, shape, or form, get a job, leave the house. About 6 years old is when they do that, right?
Yeah.
That's what I figured. Tennessee basketball. I'm just listening. I'm processing things as a guy who is cards on the table here, 43 years old, and is in a couple months going to have two kids under the age of 5. So, yeah, I'm just processing things. Like, it's good to just wake up randomly like yesterday and behind your left knee just hurts. You don't really know why. Like, both in, like, just above and below the knee. And you're like, I didn't do anything. Why is this hurting? So it's good to have those kind of things and then know that you're going to be chasing around not one but multiple kids for the next, like, you know, 18 years. It's good. It's good. Good thing the anti-inflammatories exist. I'm gonna have to start taking turmeric. Probably, I'm getting to that age now where I'm like, do I have to start thinking about taking like an anti-inflammatory turmeric supplement? Welcome to life. My dad was right about many things in my life, and maybe the most right thing he ever said was, after you turn 40, just nothing works anymore. Like, just eventually, just all starts going away. During the 30s, he kept telling me like, just enjoy this while you can. Because it's going to go, and it's going to go soon. And he was right. Big game for Tennessee basketball tomorrow. The Vols headed down to Gainesville to the O-Dome. I guess I'm not even going to say the official name of the place now. It's stupid and long, and I don't have to say it, and I won't. I'm still calling it the O-Dome, where Tennessee will play the reigning national champion Florida Gators. And in case you have forgotten, I'm guessing you haven't. Whether you're a Tennessee fan or a Florida fan watching, listening to this, I'm guessing you did not forget what happened the last time Rick Barnes and his Volunteers went down to Gainesville. They lost 73-43, and it wasn't even that close. It was, and I'm not exaggerating, probably one of the five worst performances I've ever seen from Tennessee in any sport in a single game. It was wretched. And to tell you how wretched it was, Tennessee, just a little bit later in the year, Florida goes up to Knoxville. Tennessee doesn't have Zakai Ziegler. Tennessee has seven scholarship players available, and it beats the snot out of Florida at Food City Center. And then they played again in the tournament. It was a good game, but Florida was the better team, and it won it. And then Florida goes on and wins the national championship. But that time in Gainesville, earlier this week, Tennessee's J.P. Estrella, who, as you know, redshirted last season, played a couple games, then had the surgery, redshirted, and now he's back. He very diplomatically said that Tennessee's performance in Gainesville was not great. He was like, bit of a tough day. And then he kind of grinned because he knew exactly what he was saying. It was bad. It was about the worst that most of us have seen. It was bad. Now, I will say, let's keep in perspective, Florida did win the national championship. That Florida team got hot at the right time. And it had a coach who, you know, that investigation was what it was. I will forever think that if Florida at that time did not have a team that could win the national championship, I think that entire investigation could and would have ended very differently. But not going to cast too many stones when I don't know exactly what was going on. But what was out there was problematic enough that to sit there and not have really any kind of a punishment for it, that felt a little weird. But I mean, they knew what kind of talent they had on that team, and they went on and won a title. So, hey, it is what it is, right? I mean, it's unfortunate, hardly shocking in this day and age, but still, that was a good basketball team. And that guy, say what you will about him, he's a good basketball coach, good recruiter, understands kids. And I think that team last season, that Florida team last season, I think sort of was one of the biggest reasons why Tennessee made a couple of, you know, structural changes in the way that it's kind of roster building. Tennessee wanted to get bigger. And I think that makes all the sense in the world when you think that last season or two seasons ago, there were a couple teams Tennessee probably wasn't going to be able to beat. It ran into one of them. In the Elite Eight, Purdue, it didn't get to the Final Four. Last season, there were, I still think, only a couple teams maybe Tennessee couldn't beat. Or, I don't want to say couldn't beat, because on the right day, you saw in Knoxville, Tennessee could beat one of them. But Florida and UConn were probably the best two teams out there, and that's Tennessee ran into, or I'm sorry, Florida, Houston. Tennessee ran into Houston in the Elite Eight, didn't win. Didn't go to the Final Four. And Tennessee lost in the SEC Tournament Final to Florida. Second time in three games that year they lost to Florida. And that size Florida had on the glass last season, there were very few times. I sat there courtside in Nashville at that SEC Tournament Final. And Tennessee was not playing badly. But there were very few times, and I saw this also courtside against Edie a couple times, and a little bit against Houston, where there were times where Tennessee had virtually no chance on the glass and was just kind of physically manhandled. That's something that almost never happens with Rick Barnes as your basketball coach. And, you know, basketball kind of evolves and changes over time, right? You know, the Warriors brought in this positionless basketball, small ball, the Rockets would do it, the ISO stuff, the spreading the court out. And so other people had to kind of start copying that because the best teams were doing it this way. But we've seen kind of things wrestle back the other way now in some ways, and some of the big guys are coming back. And they still got to be able to shoot a little bit. But in the NBA, now the teams with the Giants are again kind of near the top. And now you're seeing that with things like Trae Young with the Hawks and what kind of trade value he even has. A couple years ago, and he's still one of the most talented offensive scorers in the league, but he's tiny. He's a horrible defensive player. And so you wonder, teams are going to have to be very specific, very intentional about pairing somebody with him if they want to compete, you know, win playoff series and things like that. And the past couple years in college basketball, the big men have been ruling the roost a little bit again. Because you always think of the NCAA tournament as a guards game. But a lot of these big guys, like last season Florida, and those guys, when they wanted the ball in the glass, they went and got it. And they had a wall full of 6'10", 6'11", 7-foot dudes that were big, thick, and you just couldn't get the ball. And I think that's why Tennessee went and did some of the things that it did in trying to reshape the roster a little bit in the offseason. That's why guys like Dwayne Brown are there. That's why Jalen Carey was brought in, because he doesn't have the length, but he's, you know, we've said this many times, people bounce off him like he's a trampoline. These guys were brought in as a response to this. And they're going to need to be that again tomorrow, because I'll tell you, there are very few times where Tennessee is going to go up statistically against a team this season that rebounds better than it does, because Tennessee is virtually top five in rebounding nationally across the board. Offensive, defensive, margin, all these things, percentage, all these things. But you know who's number one? The Florida Gators. They are big, they are physical, and they are a handful on the glass. They're guards up and down, and that's probably why. Again, though, you look at it, and they're not even ranked, but metrically, Ken Palm, all those guys, still top 12, top 13, top 14. They're still fine. And that's despite the guards being up and down. Those big guys are a problem. They are a problem. And it reminds me a little bit of the way John Calipari got his Arkansas guys ready to play Tennessee. And a lot of people do this when they're going into a game against Tennessee. They tell them, guys, if you don't play as hard as you can and you don't go as hard as you can after every single rebound, you absolutely have no chance to win this game. If you go out there and you are not ready for a fist fight in a phone booth, you are not going to win this game. That's almost exactly how Calipari put it. That's exactly how people put it. If you are not ready physically to play Tennessee, look at Louisville this year, same thing. Weren't ready to play physically. Texas, first half especially, just not physically ready to play Tennessee. This is going to be one where the shoe kind of goes on the other foot temporarily, and that's always interesting to me. What happens when a bully gets hit in the face? When a bully gets pushed to the ground? When a bully gets somebody knocking him to the deck and dunking on him? What happens then? Because last season that happened a little bit down there in Gainesville. Tennessee didn't know what to do. I would think they did respond, in fairness, because they played them better and played them much better in Knoxville. They were just, they and their crowd, Food City Center, Tennessee's just hard to beat there. They whooped up on them, despite being outmanned in a lot of ways, just took them down. And then they put up a good fight in Nashville, just the better team won the game. But this is a game physically that if Tennessee is not ready to go out there and fight, I mean fight, then they will get obliterated on the boards. And if this Tennessee basketball team gets crunched on the boards, it is not winning. This team is built around that. Jacoby Gillespie, his offense, important, super important. He played well, by the way, for Maryland against Florida last season. He played very well. Put a pin in that. But the physicality is what Tennessee hangs its hat on. And in this game, Tennessee, I think, is fortunate in some ways to only be a 5.5-point underdog. That's what I, at least the last I saw, was 5.5 points. It's hard to go down there and beat those guys. And they're going to be ready to play Tennessee. You know they are, because they're going to put on the film. And a lot of them don't even have to watch the film. They just know when they see those pinstripe orange pants, those candy stripers warm up on the floor, they know what they're getting in for. They know that they're playing the rare team that has the ability to at least physically go toe-to-toe with them, which most people just can't. I'm fascinated to see how that goes because that is – I don't expect Tennessee to win the game, candidly. Even though it's at noon, which is better than playing at 8 or 9 p.m. or 7 p.m. on the road. Earlier on the day – earlier in the day on the road, the better. But that is a – that's a tough matchup for Tennessee. Tennessee, you know, Okpara is dealing with the hit pointer. He'll play, obviously, but, you know, he's got to play through it, and he will. I don't love Tennessee's chances in that game, just to be candid with you, but – the main thing that I want to see is, are they physically ready to go? Now, if you get in foul trouble, you make some of these things, okay, fine. I will live with that in this game. I would, because you're at least trying to carry the fight to a physical team. And if the game's called a certain way, it is what it is. You just hope they go both ways, right? But you just can't sit there and be as meek as you were against Arkansas. Make your free throws, be calm, but when the ball's on the glass, be an animal. That's what you're going to have to do to have a chance in this game tomorrow. Looking forward to that. We'll have a lot to discuss. Obviously, we'll be able to recap that game. I'll tell you, in 71 hours, Tom, we're going to have portal news like crazy. We're going to have a basketball game, two basketball games to recap. I don't know.
We're going to have plenty to talk about on Monday.
Yeah. I don't know. Monday may even be one of those times where I'm like, is it possible to do everything in an hour? I don't know. Seeing what the schedule is Monday might be like, we go a little bit of OT on this one. We might have to consider the possibility or do something later in the evening. I don't know. We got a lot of ideas. These are running through my head. I got a whole weekend to think about this. Guys, we'll have coverage of all the stuff over the weekend at WBR.com. We'll have it coverage right here on the station, right here on the streams. We'll have digital content at the wazoo at WBR.com. Go check all of it out now. Go get WBR Plus. Go get 10 News mobile app. All those things. But for this program right here, we'll see you in about 71 hours. Have a good weekend. Be safe.